Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I've become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. I wanted to take a second to tell you about our season two sponsor, Springwise. Springwise is the global ESG innovation platform that offers its readers early access to the ideas transforming our world. I actually started using Springwise probably 10 years ago to review innovative startup ideas, and I've been a fan ever since. There are three new stories on the site every weekday featuring solutions to some of the biggest challenges we face as a global community. You'll find innovations in climate tech, renewable energy, plastic alternatives, the circular economy, and how we can live a more sustainable life. The stories are sourced and written by the Springwise team of journalists and will give you an inspiring take on what's right around the corner, whether you read it to inform your work or simply for a regular dose of optimism. Springwise sets the innovation agenda. The newsletter is free to access, and to sign up, visit springwise.com/newsletter-signup. As you might know, chemicals and fuel spills from traditional boats can harm our waters. Lack of maintenance, the type of fuel, and leaks can increase pollution and the number of harmful bacteria in the marinas affecting our water health. Electrifying cars has provided a fossil-free future on our roads, but what about our waterways? This week, I speak with Mitch Lee, a mechanical engineering graduate turned CEO of ARC. Mitch began his career as a stress analyst on the AH-64 Apache, transitioned into software development, and eventually co-founded ARC, a company at the forefront of revolutionizing watercraft with high-performance electric boats. ARC is leading the charge in designing, manufacturing, and distributing the next generation of watercraft. Their innovative approach to integrating electric powertrains, starting with freshwater sport boats, also redefines the possibilities for wakeboarding and water skiing. Mitch explores the journey of choosing an electric system for boats, the challenges the company faced during the development of the first prototype, and the unique approach of doing most of the work, including software development, in-house. With ARC's mission to electrify all watercraft, reducing the environmental impact of traditional boats, Mitch shares insights into their dedication to sustainability and creating a new era for boating enthusiasts. Here's our conversation. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
So before we get into the big audacious idea of building electric boats, I think it would be good to just kind of start with a bit of your background. And, you know, we often ask the kind of just a question of the correlation between, your history from either kind of school and work and career and kind of what led you to building a business, obviously tackling the electrification of boats, but also that, of course, is a climate-based business. And so what was it that kind of led you that way and understanding maybe a bit of your background?
So there are probably two paths that converged at some point to lead me to ARC. The first is that I'm an engineer by trade and by training. I got a degree in mechanical engineering. Spent my first couple of years out of college working on helicopters out of Mesa, Arizona, before transitioning over to software development and spending a while as a software engineer. So I've always had this background enthusiasm for the engineering side of things. And then there's the marine side, which is I grew up in the Bay Area to a family of lifelong boating enthusiasts, the type of parents that would spend every weekend out on the water with us, kneeboarding, wakeboarding, skiing. So I grew up with this love of the water, and that extended to fishing and just, you know, being on beaches and generally enjoying the water. So if you've kind of, I guess there's probably a third track here as well, which is the entrepreneurial side of it. From a very young age, one of my other great passions in life was kind of finances and financial literacy. And I started trading stocks when I was, I don't know, 8 or 10 years old and got into currency trading when I was in high school and really just got very excited and enthusiastic about the business side of things as well. I have a my second major is in economics, and I kind of love that material as well. So you fast forward all three of those tracks. I joined some startups in the Bay Area on the software side, ended up founding one myself, or co-founding one rather. That had a moderately successful exit to an even larger software company. And that freed me up to think about what I wanted to do next with my career. And all these things kind of converged back. I really enjoy software development, but I was missing the hardware aspect of it, missing the idea of building something physical. I enjoyed the startup aspect. I missed that when I was at the larger company. And then also, this idea has been hanging out in the back of my mind for many, many years, probably since the first time I saw a Tesla, was somebody should make this for boats because it makes so much sense. It solves all these pain points with boats, and I'm happy to get into those at any point. But the idea is just so obvious. It turns out that the hard part is execution. And so that's ultimately what led me to co-founding Arc.
And when you started, so you sold your company. Did you have to stay on? And you sold it to Credit Karma, which I think maybe was it an Intuit company at the time as well?
No, they were later acquired by Intuit. Yeah, I had a commitment to them, both monetary and through ethics, to take the product that and company that they purchased and help integrate it into their own product and help build up a team there as well. So I stayed with them for several years, and it was an awesome company. I respect a ton about what they do. I really enjoyed working for the leadership team there.
So what was your first kind of, idea? Was it just doing some research, seeing if any of the kind of major boating companies had started to dabble in this idea that they could, build an electrified motor and boat, or were there like how did or did you just go straight into, finding a co-founder, starting to build your own kind of prototype in a kind of a garage? Like how did that first initial kind of idea go
I'd probably
into
take this a
some
step
sort of
back
form?
because there was a little bit of a process leading up to that idea of building an electric boat. The first is I knew I wanted to go do something different. And how I approached that was I wanted to work on something that I have this term like unambiguously good, that you walk in to a room and people ask you what you do and you say, I do X. And you want the reaction there to be like, I'm so glad you're doing that. That seems like it's good for the world. There's no ambiguity. And I think there tends to be it's a pretty hard or high bar to clear. I don't want to pick on specific companies, but you should just take I don't know, Facebook or something like that. Obviously doing a lot of good in connecting the world, but also like maybe there's some ambiguity over some of the downsides of being on social media so much. That led me in the direction of working on hardware things and more particularly in kind of the climate space. There were some other ideas that we were batting around. And when I say we, it's myself and my now co-founder, Ryan. He and I went to college together, overlapped briefly during our time at Boeing just out of college before he went on to work at SpaceX for several years. He was the type of person that I always wanted to spend more time working with. He's extremely talented, extremely thoughtful. And so when it came time to think about what I wanted to do next, and my mind started going back towards starting a new company, he was on the very short list of people that I would want to do that with. So he and I started brainstorming ideas. And again, in this kind of climate leaning space where there's like a really strong core mission that you don't need to do a lot of squinting at or a lot of jumps to think about, are you doing something that's good for the world? We did that brainstorming, and electric boats was high on that list of ideas. And the more we like looked into it, the more it became pretty obvious that this could be a viable business, that the timing was right, and the opportunity was there, and we got more and more excited about it, ended up quitting our jobs and going after it.
Well, building a boat, and then obviously one that is not even on the market, obviously takes, you know, expertise and resources, but also money. And what was like, did you end up going and doing, you know, a family and friends round? Did you guys have finances from you said you had a successful exit. Like, what was your plan? Or was it, you know, venture right away to get a larger round to kind of kick off this kind of initial idea and concept?
So we went the venture capital route, and that was driven by two things. The first is, given my experience in the Bay Area and having started a prior company, I had a decent network that I could tap into to facilitate that fundraise. The second is, when you look at the type of idea that we're going after, hardware companies tend to be capital intensive, or more so than software companies. And I like to describe them as being driven by execution risk rather than market risk. What I mean by that is, if you look at a company like Snapchat, it's a really hard company to build, but not necessarily because it's hard to, the like software is hard. It obviously is at their scale, but when you first start out, like, I mean, you know, Facebook cloned Snapchat in a few days. The hard part about it is hitting the right virality loops, and like, there's a pretty big luck aspect to being in the right place at the right time, getting the right people to use it, and like getting that flywheel going of virality and network effects. Or if you look at something like augmented reality or cryptocurrency, it's a question of like, is this something that people really want? You're taking a lot of market risk. What we're trying to do instead is take execution risk, which is to say, there's a known market for what we're building, boats. Tons of people buy boats every year. They are very popular. You know, there's known demand that we're tapping into. And all we're trying to do is build a better boat. The hard part is, can we actually go build a better boat? But the good news is, if we're able to do that, then we're, you know, there's going to be demand for it. The example I tend to give is like the pinnacle of taking execution risk is a company like SpaceX that says, hey, we're going to reduce the cost of getting 1 pound of goods into space by two orders of magnitude. And if they're able to do that, it's obviously going to be a compelling business. The hard part is, can you actually do that? Like, that takes reusable rockets and a lot of incredible engineering to make that happen. So when you're faced with an execution or a business that is driven by execution risk, you kind of want to move quickly there, and you don't need to be as risk averse when it comes to deploying capital. So venture capital starts to make a lot of sense. You're not looking for product market fit in the traditional sense of a software company. What you're doing is saying, like, we have to go hire a really talented team that can help us get through these really hard research and development problems or these really hard engineering challenges. And having the capital to go do that is important. So venture capital tends to be make a lot of sense. So right out of the gate, we raised a seed round led by Andreessen Horowitz, and Lower Carbon Capital Abstract also joined that round. And by the end of the year, we had raised our Series A again to arm us with the capital necessary to get into production on our first model.
Because I guess the risk there would be the markets there and the competitors internally. Because you'd also assume that, well, maybe not, right? And I guess this is kind of the classic Tesla example here, where, yeah, GM did build an electric car, and then they kiboshed it, and you know, Tesla kind of spent a lot of money to execute and build, you know, a great electric car. That's obviously they are where they are now, and all the other big car manufacturers are now, you know, piling on into the market now, because that's the demand is different and changed. So is that risk more on the market and the competitors in the traditional boat market? Like, is it a, Mastercraft is, you know, they're putting millions and millions of dollars of this in their own stance, or like, what is it first getting into the market first, you know, really important, and that's why you need to have the capital to execute?
The capital is necessary because it tends to just be expensive to build large physical products. I mean, we're building 24-foot boats with twice as much battery capacity as your average electric sedan, three times as much, and 500 horsepower motors in them. Like, that, it takes money to go do something like that. I mean, the boats we're selling are well in excess of $100,000. So just building one takes quite a bit of money. So you need that capital to be able to invest in your tools, invest in materials, invest in prototypes, invest in the team. That's probably the most important investment is the team to do that work. And that, again, tends to be more capital intensive than just a software company that might be able to get quite far on a product with just two people. The nice part is, if you're successful, you've developed a very sustainable moat. The problem, you know, car companies are still trying to catch up to Tesla, 12 or 14 years into them doing what they're doing. The biggest manufacturers in the world, some of the most talented manufacturers in the world, are still trying to play catch up on the electric car front and hold good margins on those. And it's a very defensible moat if you can go do this, compared to that two-person software startup, which again might be able to get a lot of traction, but the defensibility isn't quite there because another two-person team can come along and make a lot of progress.
Yeah, and I love the market analogy, and we've had a few entrepreneurs that have addressed the same kind of point that you had mentioned, where, you know, maybe not specifically around, you know, the execution challenge, but more just that the market is already developed. People are buying boats, people are selling boats, people have demand for boats, and they're going to continue to have demand for boats moving forward. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to provide a better option in a market that's already there, which, you know, is there are a ton of businesses like this or opportunities like this within, you know, if we put on the lens of climate, because, you know, there are probably certain plastics that are made from petroleum. And if you can do the same price point or if better, and it's not based off petroleum, then you have a market that's there. You're going to have to figure it out. It's going to be difficult. And the execution is going to be hard, but on the other side of it, that market is defined. And because of that, have you found that it's been a bit easy? Well, you know, I'm sure it's not always easy, but has it been a bit easier to get the capital because of the market on the other side?
At the end of the day, I think capital allocators, venture capitalists, care about the return on their investment. This is almost a universal truth. So our pitch to investors is very much on, this is a really good opportunity with a really high potential return on investment. We candidly try to avoid almost any sort of discussion about climate, not because we're not really proud of the impact that we can have there, but because we don't want to use that as a crutch. We don't want it to be, hey, you should invest in us because we're helping the climate. We want to say, look, this is an awesome opportunity where doing the right thing to make a lot of money, it also helps the environment. And I think that pitch tends to resonate. Again, the thing that we're delivering to the market is a much better boat. It's a much better boat because it's electric, because it solves all these pain points with gas boat ownership, with reliability, with the cost to operate it, with the noise that you're dealing with the gas engine, the winterization that you have to go through. So we focus kind of on that and how much progress we've been able to make over such an accelerated period of time. And that kind of speaks for itself.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. We chatted a bit before the show, and I've boated my entire life. I have lots of friends that boat. I fish. I've had a lot of boats over the years, so I get that pain point. And I think if we think about, you know, the overwhelming kind of, you know, comment about electric cars or electrification is that it just tends to be better. Like driving my electric Volvo feels good. It's you know, I enjoy driving it, and it solves a lot of the annoyances that I have with, you know, oil changes and, you know, getting fuel and doing that. And then when you do that with a boat, you know, the amount of times that my boat used to get, you know, water temperature issues, and, you know, you're trying to fill up the boat on an edge of a beach and you're, you know, spilling oil and gas everywhere. It's like there are a lot of annoyances and problems. So attacking that kind of market for the problem of just a boat ownership is really, really compelling. So you got some money. What did you hired some people, you partnered with Ryan, you co-founded this business. What was it like to get your first boat, you know, your first boat concept built? And, you know, was it, and how did the market kind of receive it?
So quickly before, I'll touch on that in just 1 second, but a point I'd like to make about the benefit of going electric in the marine space is gas cars are actually quite good at what they do. They're quiet. You're in this fully enclosed cabin. They're reliable. Refueling them tends to be quite convenient. They're pretty good at what they do. Gas boats are kind of awful at what they do. They're these vehicles that have technology stuck in the 1980s. You know, good luck finding one with a reliable fuel gauge, much less a reliable speedometer on it. You're sitting on top of the motor, just hearing the, you know, all the like noise coming out of that. So you could barely hold a conversation at 5 miles an hour, much less 25 miles an hour. And they're sitting in this highly corrosive environment. So the reliability of them is absolutely awful. And again, you have to like go through these periods of winterization. So they're really bad at what they do. And the net improvement going from a gas boat to an electric boat is dramatically higher than the improvement in going from a gas car to an electric car. Sure, with your electric car, you get better acceleration and a little bit more reliability. But, you know, the main reason to do that is honestly a lot of the software aspects of those electric cars. On the boating side, it's a dramatic improvement. And so that's one of the reasons that makes us so excited about these boats is they're, again, just a dramatic improvement. Like, you know, electric cars still have issues with their windshield wipers or their air conditioning units, or you know, all the other accessories that they have on the like in that vehicle. Once you remove the complexity of a gas engine on a boat, you're left with a pretty simple system and a highly reliable one. So anyways, I'll move on to then the question of, okay, how do we go build one of these things? We moved into an empty facility, and this mentality that Ryan brings from his time at SpaceX, and that the whole founding team, which all kind of came from SpaceX, is how do you treat hardware like software? How do you learn as quickly as possible on the hardware side? We started doing these subscale models of a boat within literally 1 week of moving into an empty facility. And then from there got our first boat on the water within 3 months of getting keys into that facility. And that wasn't because we had done a year of pre-planning on the design of the boat. We basically moved in with almost nothing. And over the course of 3 months, this team brought together what's known as like a test mule, a thing that could validate the core concepts that we were working on. So our in-house battery packs, the whole construction that would be lightweight and strong enough to accommodate the size and weight of those battery packs, and some of the software and controls necessary to, you know, enable this to go quickly. And then over the course of the next 9 months, it was okay, we've made a functioning boat, a really exciting boat, something that can accelerate really quickly, and it's quiet, and, you know, had the basic foundation of what we wanted to go do. How do we go make that aesthetically pleasing? How do we go turn this into a product that somebody's going to be willing to spend a lot of money on? So that was kind of the next 9 months. And then the final, like the 12 months after that, it was actually getting that ready for production and for handing it over to a customer. And that's a really high bar to clear when somebody's paying a lot of money for a boat. They expect high reliability. They expect really awesome performance. They expect really good fit and finish. But over the course of 2 years from when we started to, or I guess from when we started to 2 years later, we were ready to deliver our first boat to a customer. And that timeline, the amount of capital we deployed over that period of time was remarkably fast and remarkably low for an electric vehicle of this complexity.
Oh, and when and in terms of customers and kind of customer demand, you know, reading into this, it was that, you know, kind of similar to how a bit how Tesla kind of went to market with the Roadster, kind of a premium, more expensive, and I think, you know, probably safe to say still that ARC boats are still going to be probably in at least a premium category or premium option, even when it's at scale. But what was the did you end up selling all of these kind of first model
so the ARC
boats?
One was the first boat we brought to market, 24-foot aluminum hull, 500 horsepower, luxury cruiser is kind of what we called it. That boat was our version of the Tesla Roadster, if you will. Limited production, a really exciting product because there's nothing like it in the world on the water today. We sold out of it, and we just recently completed deliveries of it to the last customer. The purpose of that is obviously there's the upside of generating revenue from it, but it's for the same reason that Tesla did the Roadster. It's like, look, this is a vehicle that in some ways is almost hand built. It's not designed necessarily for mass manufacturing, but it's a really important process for a company to go through to get those learnings from trying to build a boat, this complexity at that's capable of the performance that we wanted it to have. Doing that in almost like a batch production or a pilot production run before you set your sights on mass market production. I think Tesla did this really well by starting with the Roadster and then shutting production down before going on to the Model S. I think companies like some of these newer electric car companies are struggling to go from zero straight to mass manufacturing. And how you're seeing this play out is it's a really long timeline to get to market, or they're really struggling to get their costs under control. Like their bill of materials is far too high. The complexity of the vehicle they're building is far too high in order to hold good margins. So by doing this pilot run of production, not only did that help us build a brand and a team and get our early customers excited about what we're doing, but it also provided invaluable learnings for us on the manufacturing side and bootstrapped a lot of our operations there, such that when we go after a mass market model, which we're actively developing now, we have a lot more conviction that we know what we're doing. We're going to be able to hold good margins on that boat. We're going to be able to ramp production of it quickly. We're not going to have service issues out in the field after we deliver them.
And when we think about, like, I think about cars and Tesla and the type of vehicles or Audi they're building, they have a lot of different kind of models. And when you think about boating, if I think about Mastercraft, or they're probably, I'd say they're good Great Lake boats, they're wakeboarding boats. That's kind of their specialty. But then if you think on the other spectrum, there's fishing boats and cruising boats and ocean boats versus freshwater versus saltwater boats. How do you, I guess, where do you go and where do you want to play in that? Like, and do you think that there's a place to serve, more of a generalized boat, a cruiser or the more of the freshwater, lake boat, which allows you to do wakeboarding? Like, how do you approach
Absolutely.
that part of the market?
I love this question because it's so core to what we're doing. Our goal, our mission here is to electrify everything on the water. We happen to be starting with wake sport boats, and those are exciting for a variety of reasons. And you keep mentioning Mastercraft, like that is the type of market that we're going to go after next. But what makes what we're doing special and what makes us what we're doing so exciting from an investor perspective is the same technology that we use to go deliver the Arc One to the market and factors into what we're going to do in the wake sport market and sets the foundation for that mass market wake sport boat. And that technology then carries over to these other segments that you mentioned, whether that's a fishing boat or an offshore boat or a water taxi or whatever else. If I'd like to, I have this like pithy phrase that the hard part about EVs is the E part, not the V part. Meaning, the hard part about building a boat like the one that we're doing is the whole electrical system. It's the battery packs, it's the testing and validation of those battery packs, it's the supply chain supporting that, it's the control software making sure that this thing is safe and reliable. It's that kind of whole infrastructure. So whereas a company like Mastercraft might not necessarily have an advantage when it comes to building bay boats or pontoon boats or little fishing boats, because what they specialize in is hull manufacturing for wake sport boats and throwing a really good wake. And a lot of the other parts come off the shelf. A company like us that's actually integrating that whole electrical system, we have a huge advantage when it comes to making a better version of you could kind of name the segment that we want to go after. Because of all the learnings that we've accumulated, because of the team and the talent that we've assembled to go after first the Arc One, then the mass market wake sport boat, and on and on. And that's what gets exciting here is it's not just investing in this next market that we're going after. It's investing in the technology that enables us to go after every other segment in the marine industry.
Yeah, and a traditional boat from, my knowledge is typically, as you said, it's they have their hull, that's kind of their specialty. If it's aluminum versus fiberglass versus for, creating a great wake or cutting through waves, that tends to be their kind of specialty. And then, how they put all the pieces together. And the engines are typically from, your Yamahas, your Mercurys,
Mercury, exactly.
and they bring those all in, and it's typically not from the boat manufacturer as well, where obviously you're putting those two together, which in general is a groundbreaking kind of application in boating.
Exactly. I the example I've sometimes given in the past is, if you, let's take semi trucks. Freightliner is one of the biggest manufacturers of semi trucks in the world. And if you're kind of an investor here and you're looking at, okay, I think semi trucks are going to go electric, who would you rather bet on? Tesla to make a better electric semi truck or Freightliner to make a better electric semi truck? I think most people reach the conclusion that Tesla has a extreme advantage when it comes to making an electric semi truck. Not necessarily that the semi truck's perfect or anything, but relative to the team, the talent, the experience that Freightliner has, Tesla has a pretty huge leg up. That's the same, and again, that kind of proves that point of the hard part about making an electric vehicles is the whole electric system, the whole like everything from the supply chain and the sourcing your batteries all the way through to testing and validation and qualification, all the way through to the telemetry system and software infrastructure you need to be constantly monitoring them and updating them over time. That's what makes it really hard, and that's what gives them an advantage when it comes to going after those new verticals in a way that an existing and established player doesn't necessarily have that expertise in-house. And doesn't have that inherent advantage to go electric.
So with Arc One sold out, delivered, if we think about, the 3 to 5 years, the next kind of plan, what does the next 3 to 5 years look like for Arc Boats? Like, obviously, it sounds like, delivering more of a mainstream wakeboarding boat. But kind of in your words, like, what do you really need to kind of focus on over the next kind of 3 to 5 years to start to get this into more hands?
It's expansion. The next product we're bringing to market is our first mass market product, a fully electric wake sport boat that we are extremely excited to introduce to the world later this year. The first focus for the company needs to be on getting it to production on that. It's less of a concern about demand, and this is true not just for us, but for a lot of electric vehicle companies. You tend to be more supply constrained than demand constrained, that you really need to go nail like manufacturing and production, both in terms of being able to produce a lot of units to satisfy some of that demand, but also to like make it a sustainable business in the process to make sure that you're holding good margins, to make sure that you're building a product that allows you to be a profitable, compelling business. So that's where a lot of our focus is going to be on over the next, call it 12 to 18 months. From there, another thing that makes what we're doing so exciting is the speed at which we can expand. So it's kind of expanding our production capabilities across the one product line, but then also expanding the number of product lines that we have. That tends to be, if you look at an automotive or aerospace or anything like that, it's usually many, many years of development time to bring a new product to market, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more, to do that. For us, it's, I mean, again, we went zero to first customer delivery on the Arc One in about 2 years. We'll go zero to first customer delivery on this next product we're bringing to market in about 18 months, 19 months. And then you look at where we want to go from that. We want that development time to continue to come down. So even looking 3 years out, we want to have expanded beyond wake sports into other markets. And certainly by 5 years, we have a presence in some of the largest segments of the marine industry. And that should also expand to include commercial applications, Coast Guard boats. So a lot of exciting expansion ahead of us.
And I love the comment about the demand side, that the demand is there. It's about building up that supply side, and obviously supply side needs to be delivered, but you need to deliver a great experience. And I think that that's been such a focus with ARC, and you can see from what you've delivered and your focus on the product that it looks incredible, and that from what I've read and reviewed, that the experience is pretty amazing. And so, like, if you can do that and deliver an amazing experience, and you can start to scale that out, and you have demand already, then it's obviously pretty exciting next 3 to 5 years. You sold a software company to a fairly large company that then got bought by even a larger company, and so you could have taken a pretty easy, not I wouldn't say easy, but he could have taken the next path of just doing that again, and getting back into software. But you chose to go into something that's a big problem and a big opportunity, which is solving, bring on, boats are known for bring on another thousand, and that's the analogy if you're a boater, because it just costs you lots of money because they are such a pain in the butt. And so I think that in itself is an amazing thing, is to go after the market just to fix the problem. But then there's the climate side of things too, and as we electrify things, and we want, we don't want to have electric, cars, and then we go into this gas powered, loud engine boat that's riddled with problems, and so you get to solve that big problem too. But a lot of entrepreneurs and people kind of listen to the show are always kind of just wondering, like, why did you make that, that leap to do that versus just going what you kind of knew, and like, kind of what advice would you say to somebody that's kind of sitting on the sidelines and listening to this?
I think hardware gets a bad rap for being hard. It is really challenging, to be clear. They're really, really hard problems that need to be solved. But in a lot of ways, I think it's almost easier than software, in the sense that it goes back to that, like, execution risk versus market risk. One of the really hard parts with software is that it's so volatile. It's so, like, so much is out of your control. There's a lot of luck and timing involved to get your product kind of in the, like, get a flywheel going for it. There's a lot of, I don't know, consumers are quite fickle, especially with software, especially with, like, this lower cost item that is so easy to switch between. It's kind of constantly new competition popping up all the time. When you contrast that to hardware, yes, again, it is an incredibly challenging problem to go solve, but you control your own destiny in a lot of ways. A lot of what you're doing is kind of, if you can get through those problems, your probability of success is quite high. If you can go get those, engineering breakthroughs, or those, like, being able to pull that product together that delivers a great customer experience, then your probability of success and the defensibility of that success tends to be quite high. So I would really encourage more people to look at the hardware space, and climate is obviously a big part of that. That's kind of one side of it. And then the other side is, when you think about what gets you motivated to work, mission is such a big part of that. You want to be working with a group of people that are talented, But also share a common set of values and are excited to be working on the same problem together. One of the beautiful parts about being at a company like Arc is it's a fun product that you get to use yourself. It's on a really fast timeline, such that if you join the company, your work is going to be on a boat within months, not years. And it has a really compelling mission, not just in reducing carbon emissions, but also in cleaning up our waterways and in reducing noise pollution. And that's really exciting. And then you get exposure, like you assume that you're coming from a software background. Instead of, at a software company, you get exposure to a lot of other software engineers. Maybe you're a front-end engineer, you see some back-end engineers, whatever. But at a company like Arc, if you're that software engineer, you get exposure to electrical engineers and vehicle engineers, manufacturing engineers. You get all these different disciplines that you get exposure to, and you get to see what incredible talent in each of those disciplines look like. And it's this really rewarding environment to work in where you're working on something you love, you're working on a mission that you care deeply about, and your brain is being flexed in all these new ways that you might not get exposure to if you're just, I say just in quotes, but if you're at a pure software company.
Mitch, this was really, really compelling and fun to have a conversation with you on building Arc. It's a fun boat to check out. What would you recommend people do to kind of check out more about Arc, and find you online?
Our website is arcboats.com. I would definitely encourage everyone to check it out. If you love wake sports or enjoy being out on the lake with family and friends, then we have a boat for you. And if you are motivated by the mission, we have a job for you. We're expanding quickly, and so encourage everyone to check out our website, arcboats.com.
Thanks for joining us, Mitch.
All right, thanks a lot.
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Someone Like You. We're a new podcast, and I would love if you can do a few things. One, please share the podcast with a friend, a family member, a work colleague, anybody that you can think of that would enjoy learning more about these incredible brands. Please also support these type of companies. They're doing the hard thing, and the hard thing often takes a lot of people to get on board. And don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. I'm Marco Pimentel. Thank you for joining us today. For more information on Someone Like You, you can find us on Instagram at Someone Like You Podcast, with all the links to the podcast, our website, and more information about the brands that we feature. Thank you again.